Miss Folks, would you do the roll call, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Flint?
Present.
Dr. Seideman?
Present.
Excellent. Moving on to agenda item three, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action on psychology applications. It looks like we have several of the applicants here. If you are here today, would you just identify yourself? Let's see. I'm seeing some of you do not have full names. PM, may I ask which PM you might be?
Patricia McGuire.
Thank you. And let's see, I have full names on the screen for other people. Looks like it's a pretty even distribution, Miss Folks, of people from different categories. So I think we're just going to probably start at the top and work our way down, unless there's any concerns with that.
Sounds good.
All right, Dr. Seidman, you're okay with that plan?
Absolutely.
Perfect. So section A, we have a requesting approval to sit for the ECPP only. We have one applicant in that category. Dr. Lippin, I will start with his presentation of his application. Dr. Lippin graduated with a degree in clinical psychology from APA accredited Adler University in August of 23, had an internship at an APA accredited consortium with 2,000 hours acquired. His references are available and his self-query is available. Based on that information, I'm not seeing any concerns with his application. Dr. Seidman, did you see anything you had concern about?
No, I have no concerns, Dr. Flynn.
Perfect. Then I would entertain a motion, sir, for approval, recommending approval to sit for the ECPP from Dr. Lippin.
I second that motion.
Thank you. It feels weird to do the any opposed when it's just the two of
Yes.
us. I will assume if I've heard yeses, we're good to go.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to section B. Section B is those requesting approval to sit for ECPP and licensure. There are two recusals in this section. Dr. Brissett for Dr. Seidman, correct?
Yes, I'm recusing myself from this application.
Okay, and then I have a recusal as well on item B11, Ariel Shemesh. I was a dissertation advisor for that application. So, because we do not have quorum for item B1 and B11, those two will be moved to the next board for substantive review at that time. So we'll go to B2, less
Dr. Flint,
Dr.
I'm sorry, Dr. Flint, do I need to second that or
What is the protocol for that, Kathy, Ms.
You do
Folks?
not. You do not
Okay.
need to second that.
Okay,
Thank
thank
you, Ms.
you.
Galvin. All right, B2, Leslie Belt. Would you mind presenting on Dr. Belt, Dr. Seidman?
I'd be happy to, Dr. Flint. Dr. Belt graduated from Fielding Graduate University with a PhD in psychology in August of 2023. This program was an APA accredited program. Dr. Belt completed over 2,000 hours of internship at an APA accredited Northern Arizona Veterans Affairs and completed that internship in July of 2023. We also received additional supervised verification of hours, 2,053 hours. And this was pre-internship experience, and that was confirmed by the university that that this person went to. There was an adequate practicum training contract, as far as I could see, and clear goals identified. Her reference, the Dr. Belt's references were in order based on the rules of Arizona. And it appears that all of the application materials are in order. I don't have any concerns with this application, Dr. Flint, do you?
I agree with you. Why don't we do the motion for all of these at the end for this section? So with no concerns for either of us, we'll go ahead and move to Dr. Gardner, and I can take him, Dr. Seidman, if you wouldn't mind.
Please.
Justin Gardner got his clinical psychology PsyD in clinical psychology from here at Midwestern University in Glendale in August of 2021. He had an internship and postdoc. Both hours are verified APA internship. He has two references, a self-query, and I didn't see anything in particular that I had any questions about. Dr. Seidman, did you?
No, I don't have any concerns on this application, Dr. Kwan.
Excellent. Let's move on to B4, Dr. Bunker. Dr. Seidman, would you take her?
Absolutely. Dr. Bunker also graduated from Midwestern University with a PsyD in August of 2021. The program was APA accredited. Dr. Gardner completed a 2,000-hour internship at an APA accredited program in Rochester, New York. We also received additional verification hours, 1,500 hours of pre-internship experience. There was an adequate training plan with that. References were in order as well. The self-query was fine, no reports, and I believe the application materials are in order. I have no concerns, Dr. Flint, do you?
I agree. I didn't see any concerns on that application. Thank you, Dr. Seidman.
You're welcome.
We will move on to 3B5, Dr. Ochoa. Dr. Ochoa graduated in August of 21 from APA accredited University of Arizona with a school psychology concentration. This is a reapplication after failing to attain a passing score on the ECCC. So most of the materials were already pre-reviewed in that initial approval for the ECCC. There were two references and a self-query. I did not see any other concerns in the application. Dr. Seidman, did you have any questions or concerns on this one?
I do not.
Okay.
No concerns.
Excellent. Why don't we move to 3B6, Dr. Hemingway. Would you present that?
Absolutely. Dr. Hemingway took the ECCC in January of 2024, and unfortunately, her scaled score was below the pass points required. Their initial application to take the exam was approved by the board in September of 2023. Self-query was processed in March of 2024. References appear to be in order. I don't have any concerns on this particular application. Dr. Flint, do you?
I did not see any concerns on that application. Thank you, Dr. Seidman.
You're welcome.
All right, 3B7, Dr. Curley. Dr. Curley got a degree from Walden University in clinical psychology in December of 2023. She presented hours that were both practicum hours and internship hours. However, on the practicum hours, the training plan didn't seem to be student specific. So I did want to bring that concern forward. On the internship hours at Grandis Health, there was a total of 2299.5 hours, but unfortunately on the application, it states that this individual was claiming 45 hours a week and we can only claim 40. That document was also unsigned by the psychologist, and the training plan for that internship again was not individualized to the student. So I have some fairly significant concerns about kind of showing what happened on that internship. The postdoc was also completed at the same location, Grandis Health. And again, claims 45 hours a week, can't be over 40. And there's also no signature on that form as well from the psychologist. So I'm leaning towards asking for a fair request to resupply these verification forms, only claiming 40 hours as per rule and statute. And as the form also guides, so hopefully there won't be questions on the second submission. Other than that, let me just check. Oh, one other tidbit. On the core program requirements, Dr. Curley, in the treatment modality section, now we only have to have 5 quarter hours. There were a couple areas or a couple errors on the form. One being that the personality and counseling theories class that apparently was transferred doesn't show up on transcript. Now, there's 15 quarter hours in that section. So, Ms. Galvin, I did have a question for you. When there's an error like this, but they've reported more hours than needed, what has been the historical kind of decision of this committee? Do we ask for a new form to be submitted? Do we overlook the error because we have 10 credit hours also listed? What is your opinion on that, please?
I think the best practice would be to ask that the form be corrected and submitted. It's also not signed, I believe you said.
This one didn't require a signature. It was the internship and postdoc verification hours that were unsigned.
Yeah. So I think the best practice would be to resubmit so there's no confusion whether the committee or the board accepted more than 40 hours a week.
Perfect. May I interject? This is Dr. Julie Curley.
Dr. Curley, yes.
Hi. I do have the copies of the signed documents from Dr. Jody Cuneo. I don't know why the copies you received are not signed. She sent me copies of everything that was submitted with her signature on them.
Okay.
She unfortunately couldn't be at the meeting today because she is with her Girl Scout troop heading, I think she said, east.
Okay.
So,
So Dr. Curley, that's actually a kind of a secondary concern. The bigger concern on both of those forms is that there's a claim of over 40 hours per week worked. So both forms will need to be resubmitted anyway. But I did just double check the forms that I have in the file and neither one have signatures. So it could be a PDF error, but they still need to be resubmitted because of the hours discrepancy, please.
Okay. Thank you.
And the other error that was on the core program requirements is it just looked like the interpersonal therapy class was identified as summer 19. The CV says that, or not CV, sorry, the transcript says spring 2018. So those errors in the treatment modality box, we would need to have clarified as well. Dr. Seidman, were you in agreement with those concerns? Did you have any additional concerns at all?
Well, yes and yes. So I agree with those items that you identified, Dr. Flint. Thank you. I do have a question or just a comment, and I don't know really what to do with this, but I'll just state it and we'll see where to go from there.
Please.
In the written training plan for the pre-doctoral internship, there's a statement that says the intern will be compensated for the client contact hours only. But should the intern make an arrangement to work on a sliding fee scale with the client? And then it goes on for a little bit. And that gives the impression that the trainee was being compensated for the direct service that they were providing to the client and nothing beyond that, as opposed to a stipend. And my understanding for a pre-doctoral internship training experience, it should not be the trainee should not be relied on to receive compensation from the client if it's a true training experience. So I just need to make that comment, and I'm not sure what we can do with that. Ms. Galvin, do you have any suggestions?
You're correct. We could request additional information and ask for written clarification about that arrangement and what it looked like.
That would be great, just so we are sure that it was truly a pre-doctoral internship training experience and not an employment type of arrangement.
Excellent. I completely agree with you, Dr. Seidman. Were there any other concerns on this particular application that you had?
No. Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Let's move forward to 3B8, Dr. Salix. This is a reapplication after not attaining a passing ECCC score on try number one. Dr. Salix graduated from AP Accredited Alliance International University, Clinical Psychology in September of 2023, and is requesting to be able to resit and obtain licensure with a passing score. I did not see anything that was of concern in this review. Dr. Seidman, did you have any concerns?
No, I don't have any concerns. Everything looks like it's in order for Dr. Salix to be eligible to take the PPP again.
All right, let's move forward to the next agenda in this section, 3B9. Dr. Grunston, would you feel free to present that one?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So Dr. Grunston took the EPPP in March of 2024. And unfortunately, their scaled score was below the points required for the state of Arizona. Their reapplication to take the exam was approved in December of 2023. The National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed in October of 2023. References are in order, and Dr. Grunston is looking to take the EPPP again. And there's a question, and Ms. Galvin, there's a question about accommodations, and does the applicant need to re-ask for those, or do the accommodations request carry over from one exam to the next? And I don't know if you can answer that.
Unless there's some indication that there has been a change, then I would go ahead and just acknowledge that those same accommodations can be made.
Okay, so if it's the same accommodations, then they just carry over.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't have any concerns, Dr. Flint. Do you have any concerns?
I don't. I think everything else in the application continues to be in order. And I certainly wish her well on the next test-taking try, and hopefully it's successful for her.
I agree.
Let me just make a little note here for our motions. Okay. 3B11 is the recusal, so we will bypass that. 3B12 is Dr. Schilder. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Dr. Schilder graduated from City College of New York, APA accredited program in September of 2023, clinical psychology. They submitted hours that were practicum hours at the psychological center. Looked like that was an extended practicum with a little over 2000 hours. It's my understanding that we can only use 1500 of the practicum, or up to 1500 hours. Am I misunderstanding that, Ms. Folks?
Madam Chair, committee members, no, you're not misunderstanding it, but when they verify more, we don't worry about it. As long as they meet the minimum requirement or the minimum amount for that it's fine.
Okay. So the hours appear to work out under that case. The training plan appeared to be a description of the experience versus a true individualized training plan. Dr. Seidman, did you have any thoughts about that or concerns?
Well, it did seem generic, and it didn't seem like it was individualized to this particular trainee. So that was a similar concern that I had as well.
Okay. So it sounds like we should probably request for clarification on that. I see that Dr. Schilder is with us and has her hand raised. Dr. Schilder, would you like to add any information to this?
Yes, I sent in our program manual, which detailed training experiences, but then I was told that generally, like the committee has found in the past, that they would like something more individualized. Mm-hmm. So that's why we put together what was also submitted as the individualized training plan. And I'm wondering if there could just be a bit more specific information and what exactly the committee would like to be in terms of like goals for training I guess there was some confusion between myself and my director of training between what exactly the committee was looking for, because between the program manual and then our individual written training plan, my individual training was no different than the other students in the program.
I'm just pulling up that information.
Yeah, I'm looking at that as well right now.
And I do apologize for all of the information.
Dr. Schilder, is it at the psychological center at City College? Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So this letter to me appears to be kind of just restating what's in the manual versus meeting the criterion that is listed in rule and statute. The letter that this is not a fair request. So you've never received the letter specifying those specific areas, but they are in the rule and statute. Ms. Folks, that would be sent in the fair letter, correct, to guide them to exactly what those four or five items are that should be in a correct training plan. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Like, for example, you, Dr. Schilder, there's a very nice description of that the ethical standards of APA are covered within your training. That's an example of one of them.
Is this part of, on the website, it states 9 particular criteria that the committee would like to be reviewed. And that's, we kind of bulleted that out in the individual written training plan. I see that number 9 is acknowledgement that ethics training will be included in all activities.
That's great.
So we spoke directly to that, but then also it's detailed. So is that not sufficient?
So what I'm looking for in particular is what you specifically did, not just the description of what's asked of all, and how were you assessed in that. There are a couple of other indicators that I would have to have Kathy, Ms. Folks, assistance in pulling up quite quickly because it's not right in front of me. But again, this just appears to be a reiteration of the description that was in the program handbook, and not specifically how you met these goals, how what the expectation was for you, how you were assessed that you met these goals or did not. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
First, I have a question about that.
Yes, please.
If a training plan is something that should be created and signed and dated before the pre-internship begins, how would it include how the ethics were assessed? What, like Dr. Schilder, I'm also a little bit lost on how that would present.
Well, we might be, that I might be misunderstanding what our exact requirements are for the training plan. Are you able to pull up that that section and guide me to where it is at? My Yes. idea of a training plan is that it is specific to the student, not Sure. generic to the entirety of the program.
So for example, well, the way this letter is stated, it's talking in general kinds of terms like methods of evaluation. And Ms. Folks, if that's okay, then that's okay. If it's just talking in generality as opposed to specific to this particular trainee.
Madam Chair, committee members, Dr. Seideman, the rule is AAC R426-210, subsection A, and then it's subsection 3, so A3, for each supervised pre-internship professional experience training site, the applicant has a written training plan with both the training site and the institution of higher education at which the applicant is pursuing a doctoral degree that includes at least the following: A, training activities included and the amount of time allotted to each activity; B, goals and objectives of each training activity; C, methods of evaluating the supervisee and the supervised pre-internship professional experiences provided;
Yes.
D, That's the one you're thinking of. Approve, and then the others are approval of all individuals providing supervision at sites external to the training site, total number of hours to be accrued during the supervised pre-internship professional experience, total number of hours of face-to-face contact hours with clients or patients during the supervised pre-internship professional experience, total number of hours of supervision during the supervised pre-internship professional, SPE, qualifications of all individuals who provide supervision during the supervised pre-internship professional experience, and acknowledgement that ethics training will be included in all activities. The end.
So the letter does cover all that, Dr. Seidman. Do you have, I guess my personal expectation was just a little bit higher. So thank you for that clarification, Ms. Folks.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Dr. Flint, I think this training plan actually does cover what the statute says.
Okay. Thank you for that review, Ms. Folks. I appreciate your help and guidance in that. Were there any other concerns that you had with this particular application?
No, I have no other concerns. Okay. No concerns.
Excellent. Then,
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask a question.
Yes, ma'am.
In addition to the practicum hours, does this not include an APA accredited doctoral internship 1500 hours, or will those be separate?
Well, Dr. Schilder, the requirement is 3,000 total hours, of which 1,500 can be pre-internship. So your internship does apply. That's just a separate, separate 1,500 hours. That's the minimum.
Wonderful.
And the other 15 can be either pre-internship or postdoc.
I understand. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Okay, so that was 3B12. Let's move to 3B13. Dr. Seidman, would you present on that?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Dr. Flint. Dr. Serena, I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly, took the EPPP in late March of 2024, and unfortunately their scaled score was below the pass points required in the state of Arizona. Dr. Serena's references are still in place. Dr. Serena is asking to retake the EPPP. References are in order, and the National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed in early April. I have no concerns on Dr. Serena's reapplication. Do you, Dr. Flint?
I don't. I agree with your assessment of the application, Dr. Seidman. Thank you so much.
Yes.
With no concerns, we'll move on to 3B14. Dr. Galvin. Dr. Galvin is also a reapplication. This would be a third attempt for the EPPP. That journey began back in September of 23, with the first attempt, second attempt in April of 24. Dr. Galvin graduated from APA accredited Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Chicago School in Interdisciplinary Psychology. That graduation date was September of 21. There was a new self query that was submitted. The references remained within time frame from the previous application. So I did not see any specific concerns on this application or reapplication for EPPP and licensure. Dr. Seidman, did you have any concerns?
I don't, Dr. Flint. I hope that Dr. Galvin will pass on this next time.
Absolutely. Best of luck to all the retesters for sure. The last person in this category is 3B15, Dr. Vasquez. We had documentation in our file on this case that there was a FAIR letter that was responded to. And at that time, the response was a request to withdraw the application. That was received on April 2nd of 2024. I don't see any concerns with that a request for withdrawal. Dr. Seidman, did you have any concerns?
No, I don't have any concerns on Dr. Sykes' request to withdraw.
Okay. So in this category, I will entertain a motion. Dr. Seidman, do you want to take a stab at it, or would you like me to
read on this one, please?
All right. So with the two recusals noted of B1 and B11, we move to approve the candidates for to be able to sit for the EPPPN licensure upon obtaining a passing score. We would like to add to that motion for number 9, that the accommodations continue to follow to this testing that Dr. Grunston had requested before. And then with, let's see, there was one other, with Dr. Curley, we are requesting a fair letter to clarify the hours for the internship and the postdoc. And we are requesting resubmission of the core program requirements to clarify the treatment modality section. And I think that's all my notes on that section. Dr. Seidman, do I hear a second?
I second that. I believe you covered everything, Dr. Flint. Excellent. Very good.
This is Jean, Dr. Flint,
yes.
And I may have missed it, but there was a concern about whether one of the individuals was a employee or stipend versus a salary. Did I hear you cover that?
No, I did not. So I will amend. And that was on.
That was Dr. Curley, Madam Chair, committee members.
Thank you, Dr. Curley. Yes, clarification, please, on the stipend for internship. Because it appears as written that it was more of an employment arrangement versus perhaps the internship arrangement. Thank you, Ms. Galvin.
And thank you, Ms. Galvin. I am learning as we go, and I appreciate your catch.
Madam Chair, Dr. Seidman,
yes.
The other one is Dr. Vasquez to approve her withdrawal request or to recommend approval.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes. Amendment number 2 to this section, the approval of the withdrawal request on B15. Dr. Seidman, do you agree with those two amendments to the original motion?
I second those amendments, and I agree with them, and I second those.
Excellent. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
No opposed. We both voted. So let's move on to the next section, please. Pull up the documentation for that. We will be reviewing applications requesting approval of supervised experience for licensure. And so that is C1. I will go ahead and present this one, Dr. Seidman. Dr. Sykes obtained their PsyD degree in clinical psychology at APA-accredited Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Submission of hours included both postdoc hours and internship hours, exceeds the total number required by rule and statute. The application was initially approved in August of 23. The EPPP was passed on March 20th of 24. At that time, there was a request to reopen the application. They sent in a postdoc verification form and training plan, which seemed to be in order. And there was also a new self-query that was received. The two references were also in the application packet. I didn't see anything else that was of concern to me. Dr. Seidman, did you pick up on anything?
No. And in fact, just a quick comment, the training plan was quite comprehensive for the supervised postdoctoral experience. So I have no concerns on this application, Dr. Flynn.
Excellent. So I would entertain a motion, please, Dr. Seidman, on Section C of our agenda.
So I move that Dr. Sykes be her supervised experience for licensure be approved. Dr. Flint, do I hear a second?
I second that. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. All right, moving right along. Section 3D are individuals requesting approval for supervised temporary license with or without the EPPP. Would you please do the presentation on Dr. McCarthy?
I'd be happy to, Dr. Flynn. Dr. McCarthy graduated from the University of San Francisco with a PsyD in clinical psychology in December of 2023. This program was APA accredited at the time. Dr. McCarthy completed 2,000 hours of an APA-accredited internship. locally here and completed that in July of 2023. In addition, we received verification of over 2,000 hours of postdoctoral work that occurred between December 2023 and December of 2024. It appears that Dr. McCarthy's references are in order and meets the state rules. Excuse me. And the National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed in January of 2024. Dr. Flint, I don't have any concerns with this application. And I'm. Do you have any concerns?
I do not. I would entertain a motion, or let me just make the motion. How about that?
I'd be happy that you do.
I'd like to motion that we approve Dr. McCarthy for approval for her second supervised temporary license based on her application packet. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Moving on to our next section, 3E, are those requesting approval for licensure by waiver. The first applicant in this section is Dr. McGuire. Dr. McGuire obtained a PsyD degree, clinical psychology, from APA-accredited John F. Kennedy University back in 2019. ECPP was passed in September of 2023, currently licensed in Colorado with the issue date of 3/13/24. There were internship and postdoc hours both submitted. The internship was an APA-accredited internship. There are two references and a self-query. I did want to get your opinion, Dr. Seidman. I wrote a note that I felt like the training plan, again, might kind of be a little bit on the edge of not being very specific to the student. Did you have any thoughts or concerns?
Well, I have a similar, thank you, Dr. Flint. I have a similar kind of comment. It appears that formal training plans aren't required in the state where Dr. McGuire received training. And what they did was basically take their handbook and then put that as their training. And they gave some examples. And I kind of have a question there. And I wonder if we could relook at that pretty quickly and
do you happen to have the page number in the packet,
Dr. Seidman? Page 36.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This was also created post-training experience.
Yes.
Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, because they don't have a formal process in their state, so they are trying to respond to what they need for Arizona.
Miss Folks, there has or has not been precedence to accept the kind of description in lieu of a training plan or not. Can you please educate me on that? Specificity, please.
Sorry, Madam Chair, committee members. Yes. When they don't have a written training plan at the beginning of their program, we have a substantive policy statement that has allowed the committee to and the board to accept a post-experience written training plan if it includes all the elements of a training plan. And they're identical, I think, to the pre-internship.
Yeah. Dr. Flint, may I ask you to look at page 40 on the application packet?
Yes, sir.
And that might be helpful based on what Ms. Fowkes just mentioned. And then if you look a little bit further down on page 41, I think there it gives some general kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about educational activities that a typical fellow would do. So I think, in my humble opinion, in lieu of not having, you know, the state of Oklahoma having that as part of their process, you know, based on precedent set, I would encourage us to accept that.
Ms. Galvin, do you have any guidance on this and what you've seen in the past, or are we thinking through all the things that we should be considering, in your opinion?
It appears to me as though you have taken into consideration what the rule requires and the fact that the board does have a policy statement that will allow sort of the retroactive authorization of a training plan when one was not, you know, part of the initial training program. You know, you have, all of you have seen more applications than I have and are the experts, so it would be your decision whether you believe that it is sufficient. But the fact that it was created after the fact is not an issue.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate your information. I just came to the point I was looking for Dr. Seidman about the evaluations that is in there. Based on that and the substantive policy statement, I am okay moving forward with this application. What are your thoughts?
Well, Dr. Flint, you know, for the record, I hear your concern and I share your initial concern. And I think us taking into consideration that this is Oklahoma State University and Health Sciences Center, and that's a prestigious training site, you know, as opposed to a site that might be a small private practice that. And so I think I would agree with you. I would like to accept this as a training plan for this applicant.
Excellent. Thank you for that opinion. I appreciate it. Let's move on with that information to 3E2. Dr. Mattis, this was a fair response. So we had requested information. So just to review, Dr. Mattis received their PhD in psychology from Wayne State University, which is an APA accredited program. The FAIR letter submitted by this committee was dated on March 4th of 2024. This letter requested clarification about the training plan, the postdoc training plan. And in my opinion, I kind of felt like this was a resubmission of what was already submitted and didn't necessarily answer the specific questions asked in the letter submitted by Chair Catarino. This individual has passed the EPP, is licensed in Indiana since February of 23, has the references in the self-query. Dr. Seidman, did you have concerns about that or anything else that you might have picked up?
Everything else looks in order, but it looks like the response is the exact same response as the first request. So I agree. I don't see anything different that they're explaining out as requested.
In these situations, Ms. Folks, would there be a second FAIR letter? Would that be the movement forward?
Madam Chair, committee members, if in lieu of the discussion today regarding written training plans, my question would be, if you look at, as you've looked at what she has included in this, does it meet with the newer understanding, or do you feel like you do need more information?
Ms. Fowkes, can I get a little bit of clarification? So I believe Dr. Catarino had requested additional information, if I remember correctly, right? So I think we're kind of coming in after the fact, you know, afterwards. So I'd have to take a minute to look closer at that to answer your question.
And that would be within the committee's discretion to go ahead and look at what was submitted and determine if that you know, meets with your satisfaction.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Can we do that right now?
Sure.
Okay. Just a quick comment. What Dr. Flint, I'm looking at page, starts on page 4.
Yep.
And what I'm seeing is there's 3 sites that they have at this particular, what was submitted, which is, this is really generic. I don't see, like, I would have a hard time applying what is here to what Dr. Mathis, what this particular applicant actually did. So
I think, Dr. Seidman, they are relying heavily on column 3 of the attachment to this letter, which again is identical to what was initially submitted and concerns were identified on.
How do you know that?
I'm sorry?
How do you know that? How do you know they're using column 3?
Well, because that's they have kind of their UM rehabilitation is their program, right? Yeah, University of Michigan.
Oh, Michigan Medicine. I got it. Thank
yeah.
you.
So I think it's buried here, but I am concerned that in the response, it's literally the same. So whatever questions the committee had at that time weren't really, there was not an attempt to answer them or connect information that may have already been presented and just, you know, overlooked or not seen. Mm-hmm. It looks like in column 3, there's more specificity. It's not to this person, which it was my understanding before, based on our conversation today, it appears it can be a bit more generic. With that understanding, I'm okay with what this says. But I wish a little bit more of an attempt would have been made to make the connection in the FAIR letter. It was kind of ignored in a way and just resubmitted the same stuff. And that's not always all that helpful.
Well, it's the exact same material.
It's the exact same material. Yes. Now, with the understanding that we've come to today of that there can be some a bit more of a generic nature, if not even one written post experience. You know, it identifies faculty, it identifies how overview and evaluation is going to be done, different types of experiences. There's not specific goals for this individual, but again, if we're not going to drill down to specificity per individual, it appears to me this meets the criterion of having the documentation available of what happened during that program. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Seidman?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Flint. I will kindly request just a few more minutes so I can look at this a little bit closer, if that's okay.
Absolutely, sir. Is Dr. Mathis on the call by any chance or on the line? I don't see. Okay.
Well, as an example, I don't see anything around ethics being integrated into the training experience based on that third column, just as an example. And that is part of our statute, that ethics training is part of the supervised postdoctoral professional experience. I just don't see that.
Oops.
The letter says something to this document was in effect, this document and this letter addresses the following areas. And then it talks about on number 8, I'm on page 4.
Yep, I see.
But I don't see that anywhere in this actual plan, this plan that we're looking at.
I'm going through quickly through column 3, and I agree that I'm not seeing anything specific to ethics. So I believe you are correct about that, sir.
Ms. Fowkes, is it possible, if I remember correctly, the FAIR requested that the applicant provide, kind of delineate, kind of just doing what we're doing right now verbally, where the letter kind of points to each one and then tells us exactly how that's involved. Can we get more specific with this applicant to do that as opposed to this generic kind of response that the person did? Because when it was reviewed the first time and the first FAIR was sent, it obviously wasn't as clear to the committee that, for example, ethics was covered.
Sorry.
I probably totally confused you right there.
No, Madam Chair, committee members, I believe that if you feel there is something lacking that is in a statute or rule, then you do have the prerogative to request additional information. Jean, would you have more to say about that?
I would think that a request to this applicant to comply with the first FAIR that was issued, I think that's what you are essentially saying, instead of finding something additional that the first review was not focused on, would be the appropriate way to phrase this second FAIR, is that the first FAIR was issued. This is what was requested. The committee found that it was just a resubmission of the same thing. They're looking for more specificity, for instance, a statement that ethics was integrated into the training program, and whatever it is that you found the resubmission of the same documents unacceptable.
And Madam Chair, committee members, and Jean, as I'm looking at this, I'm actually thinking she did just send them again. Mm-hmm. As I look at the email I received from her, she had sent an email requesting an update on her application. I said, well, you haven't complied with the second FAIR letter. And oh, I thought I already sent those. Here they are. And I think they are the identical ones. And so I see Jean's point that this will be a third FAIR, which I think is historically, Jean, please correct me, historically, as far as precedent is concerned, I'm not aware of the committee ever sending more than three FAIRs before they forward it to the board, but there's no rule or statute about it.
Yeah, I think it's within the committee's discretion. If you get another submission response to this most recent FAIR that's not compliant, then you can consider perhaps considering a recommendation for denial.
Well, I'd like to allow another response. It may just be a misunderstanding on the applicant's part, mm-hmm. that she didn't understand the request, and we could ask for some more specificity around the actual integration of those items necessary for the state of Arizona in terms of a training plan.
Madam Chair, committee members, the question I have is, you mentioned ethics as not being included in this. Were there any other specific items elements that should be in a postdoc training plan that you also see are missing?
Well, the ethics one was just the easiest one to see, Ms. Foulkes. I don't know if
the FAIR letter lists that rule. And states through one to eight of the elements.
Yes.
Ms. Foulkes, would it be appropriate to just ask in that FAIR letter with specificity to identify in the document that has the three columns that is untitled? So I don't know what to call that form exactly. Identification of each of these areas and their understanding of how they met it. Let's put the onus on them to show what they think met each of these criterion. Would that be an appropriate action to take? I'm seeing Jean's affirmation. Ms. Galvin, sorry.
I would agree, because that is the information that the committee is looking for, is an explanation to each of those points.
Ms. Foulkes, does that clarify the FAIR letter request? FAIR letter number three.
Yes, it does. Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you, ma'am. All right, let's move on to E3, which would be Dr. Barlett. Let's see, I forgot. Did I do the last one, or did you, Dr. Simon?
I think you did. I can take Dr. Bartlett if you'd like.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Dr. Bartlett is requesting approval for licensure by waiver. Dr. Bartlett passed the EPPP and is licensed in California, was licensed in California in 2023. Went to an APA accredited program, graduated in 21, did an APA accredited internship and finished that in 2021 as well. Postdoctoral verification fits us nicely, 4,000 hours, which is a 2-year postdoc, I believe. Yes, exactly a 2-year postdoc. This applicant had adequate references that were submitted in January of 2024. Had the NPDB, the National Practitioner Data Bank self-query was processed in November of 2023 with no reports. I have no concerns about this applicant, Dr. Flint. I'm wondering if you do.
I agree. Everything appeared to be in order with this application. Thank you, Dr. Seidman, for your presentation of that application.
You're welcome.
Because we have no concerns, let's move to 3E4. Dr. Han. Dr. Han received her PhD in clinical psychology from APA approved or accredited the New School for Social Research in 1999. EPPP has been passed. She holds license in New York and California, in New York since 05, in California since 2014. There are no actions in either state. There are appropriate references and an appropriate self-query were submitted. I don't have any concerns about this application packet. Dr. Seidman, what are your thoughts?
I have no concerns, Dr. Flynn.
Okay, excellent. Let's move on to 3E number 5. Dr. Akbar, would you please present on her application?
I will. So, hold on a second, please.
There are a lot of notes, aren't there?
Yes, there are. So, sorry about that.
No worries. Did you want me to jump in and do that one?
Could you please?
Yes, absolutely. So Dr. Akbar received her PhD in clinical psychology from the APA accredited California School of Professional Psychology. This is an individual who also received a FAIR request for additional information on March 1 of 2024. Internship at Providence St. John's Child and Family Development Center, which is APA accredited internship for 2,000 hours. Postdoc at Children's Hospital Los Angeles for a 2-year, which was 4,000 hours with a training plan. Two references and a self-query were in the packet. The EPPP pass date was January of 23, and they've been licensed in California since August 2nd of 23. In my opinion, everything looks to be in order. Did you have any concerns about this one, Dr. Seidman?
No, I don't. I think this applicant's packet is good.
Excellent. All right, let's move to 3E6. Dr. Brooks, would you present on Dr. Brooks,
I
please?
sure will.
Thank you.
So Dr. Brooks passed the EPPP and is licensed in the state of Colorado. I don't see anything. I have no concerns with her packet. Do you, Dr. Flint?
I don't. APA accredited program and internship, and all the hours appear to be in order.
Yep, I agree.
Excellent. So we'll move on to 3E7, Dr. Rasmussen. Dr. Rasmussen obtained their PsyD from California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, APA accredited program back in May of 22. Hours submitted are for internship and postdoc. The program manual was submitted in lieu of a training plan at the postdoc level. There are two references and a self-query. EPPP was passed in July of 2023. They hold national register credentials. which were verified in the packet, and have licensure in Texas since August of 23 with no actions. I did not see any specific issues of concern in this application, Dr. Seidman.
I have no concerns about Dr. Rasmussen's application.
Excellent. Moving on to the last in this category, 3E8, Dr. Hoffman. Would you present on Dr. Hoffman, please?
I'd be happy to, Dr. Pond.
Thank you.
Dr. Hoffman attended Marshall University, an APA-accredited program, and graduated with a PsyD in December of 2022. Predoctoral hours were almost 2,920, and postdoc hours were 1,500 at the same APA-accredited program. Completed the postdoctoral hours, excuse me, completed predoctoral internship hours in June of 2022, completed postdoctoral hours in July of 2023. Dr. Hoffman passed the ECCC in August of 2023, had the self-query processed in September of 2023, no reports from the self-query. References were adequate, and Dr. Hoffman was responding to a FAIR and had her two primary supervisors submit verification of both the internship and postdoctoral hours and explain some discrepancies. And I don't have any concerns about the response. It looks like it's all in order, unless you see something, Dr. Flint.
I still had a concern about the hours on the forms that were submitted in response to the FAIR letter. It mm-hmm. still appears that they only verified 1,920 hours, which would mean that she remains 40 hours short. Did I, Ms. Folks, did I misunderstand what I saw or miss it somewhere in the packet? Because I just double checked and it still says 1,920.
Well, Dr. Flint, can I interrupt?
Yes, please, Dr. Seidman.
So for predoctoral internship, don't they need 1,500 hours? And then they submitted postdoctoral hours too. So that would be the 3,000, correct? I'm missing something.
Let me go back to the actual form. They submitted for postdoc hours.
1,512.
My form says... 1,040.
Madam Chair, committee members, I think I know, Dr. Flint, what is missing. There
Thank
are
you.
Two postdoctoral verifications. One was from Dr. Adams, that
yes.
starts on page 6, and one was from Dr. Harple for just her own hours that she supervised.
Right.
And that one's page 18, and that one was, I believe, 160, which does take her over the 3,000 hour amount.
Thank you for that clarification, Ms. Folks. With that clarification, I don't have any other concerns on this application.
That was a lot of paperwork to look through, Dr. Flint. I get it.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes the math just doesn't math after a little while. You just need to look at it again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had my trusty calculator next to me, so I was cheating.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Folks, for that clarification.
Committee members, I just want to interject. I can't do math at all. I must use a calculator, and I have these formulas memorized after almost 6 years. So,
oh, hey, gosh.
More power to you. You know, Hewlett-Packard, we like that company.
Gosh. All right. So on this section, we've completed this section. I would like to motion to approve licensure by waiver for E1. 3 through 8. On E2, we will send a third FAIR letter asking compliance with the first FAIR letter and the reiteration in the second FAIR letter with the explicit instruction to map each item to the unnamed training plan, the one that has the three columns. There's no title to that form, but it appears that's what they're using for the training plan. Dr. Seidman, do I hear a second to those motions?
I second those motions.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Three, F, sorry, I suddenly lost the ability to read letters. requesting approval for licensure by credential. I will start with Dr. Durant. Dr. Durant obtained his PsyD, clinical psychology, in Antioch University, New England, back in July of 2008. He is a national registered credential holder as of February of 24, passed the ECCC back in August of 13. He's been licensed in New York since August of 13 with no actions. There was a self-query form included in the packet. And Miss Folks, I'm going to make an assumption that you saw the driver's license thing, because in some packets that appeared and others it didn't. So I just wanted to make sure that that was checked off on this case.
Yeah, that is something I verify before I even send the incomplete notice, that we've received their statement of citizenship and alien status form, ID, and photo.
Perfect. Thank you for that clarification. I don't see any concerns with this National Register credentialed candidate. Dr. Seidman, do you have any concerns?
I have no concerns about Dr. Durant's application.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I see, Dr. Durant, that you're here. Thank you for your application and being available in case we would have had any questions. You're on mute. There you go.
Just want to make one correction. I had my master's was attained in 2008, and then the doctorate was 2011.
2011. Thank you for that clarification.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Durant.
Take care.
All right. With no concerns on that application, we will move to 3F2, which is Dr. Mission Wilson. Would you present Dr. Seidman on that application?
I would be happy to, Dr. Flint. Dr. Wilson has an active full independent license in the state of Wisconsin and Colorado. They're both currently active. Dr. Wilson has been registered with the National Register since 2018, passed the ECCC above the Arizona requirement. Is also, hold on, has other licenses as well, I believe. Several other states as well.
Mm-hmm.
Had the self-query in January of 2024, no reports. I believe everything is in order on this application. I have no concerns. Dr. Flint, do you have any concerns?
I don't. And just for the record, I had a licensure in Michigan, California, Wisconsin, and Colorado.
Yeah, a long list. Absolutely.
And no actions in any of those states.
Correct.
I don't have any concerns about her application. I believe she's been on the call, so I very much appreciate your willingness to be here in case there had been any questions, Dr. Wilson. 3F3, Eric Rossmith. Dr. Rossmith graduated from University of North Texas in 2013. He is a CPQ verified holder as of 5/12/22, licensed in Iowa, Washington, Florida, and Kansas. I can't read my own writing. I believe that says Kansas.
Yeah.
The self-query was received. I did not see any concerns about that application for licensure by credential. Did you have any concerns, Dr. Seidman?
I have no concerns on that application.
Excellent. Moving on to 3F4, Dr. Jacobs, would you present her application?
Sure would. So Dr. Jacobs holds the CPQ as well, and since December of 2022. Dr. Jacobs has a full active independent license in the state of Iowa and Nevada, and submitted, had her National Practitioner Data Bank self-query processed in February of 2024 with no reports. I have no concerns on this application. Do you, Dr. Flint?
I agree with you, Dr. Seidman. So with that tying up that entire section, I'd like to motion that we approve the request for approval for licensure by credential for all applicants in that category. Dr. Seidman, do I hear a second?
You hear a second.
Awesome. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. Moving on to section G of our agenda, requesting approval for licensure by universal recognition. The first application in this category is Dr. Denning. Dr. Denning received a PsyD from the University of North Colorado in 2010. There was a verification of Arizona address, licensed in Colorado since 2010. There was a self-query form that was also included in the packet. And I believe that that met all the criterion for the universal recognition. Dr. Seidman, did you see anything else or anything that I missed?
No, I have no concerns on this applicant.
Excellent. Moving on to 3G2, Dr. Thompson, would you present on this applicant?
I will. I'm full disclosure, I'm having a little bit of computer problems, but I'm sure. Going to do the best I can here. So
I can jump in if you'd like me to.
I have it. Got it. Thank Perfect. You. I mm-hmm. appreciate that so much. So Dr. Thompson holds an EDD, has an active full license in the state of California since 2023, and also holds a teacher's credential in the state of California as well. Proof of established residence in Arizona was in her in the packet, has a doctoral degree from Argosy University. The National Practitioner Databank self-query was processed in January of 2024 with no reports. And it appears that this applicant is an ABEP as well. And I have no concerns about this applicant.
I agree with you, Dr. Seidman. Thank you for that overview. With no concerns, we will move to 3G3. Dr. Turner received their PsyD from Xavier University in 2006, has an expired license from Mississippi, a current license in Tennessee, no actions on either license. The address verification was complete, and the self-query form was submitted. I did not see any concerns with the application of Dr. Turner. Dr. Seidman, did you see anything I might have missed?
No concerns. At all.
Excellent. Then moving to 3G4, Dr. Baker, would you present on Dr. Baker?
I sure will. Dr. Baker has a active license since 2014, and I neglected to write down the state that was in. I apologize.
New York, I believe.
How could I miss that? Oh, yeah, it's right here, New York. Yeah, in psychology and mental health counseling. That's correct. Thank you, Dr. Flint. Has proof of established residence in Arizona. Processed the National Practitioner Databank self-query in April of 2024. No reports. Answered no to all the professional conduct questions. I have no concerns about this application. How about you, Dr. Flint?
I agree with you, Dr. Seidman. And with that application bringing up the last of the G section, I would like to motion that the request for approval for licensure by universal recognition for these four applicants be approved. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Perfect. The very last one on this record-breaking agenda is a request approval for telehealth registry by Dr. Hackett. Dr. Hackett is a PhD holder licensed in Washington. Submission of appropriate insurance documentation, evidence of statutory agent, and the self-query form were all received. And I did not see any other questions or holes in this application for the telehealth registry. Dr. Seidman, did you have any concerns?
I have no concerns on this applicant.
Perfect. With Beth, that, oh, yes. Yes,
if I may ask a question on this just for my sake. Mm-hmm. That receipt that she had initially submitted to the statutory agent, would you have accepted that as proof of a statutory agent? I just want to know for myself in processing these in the future.
My opinion is if you have a receipt, you should have the documentation, and I would prefer to see the documentation.
Okay,
good. I would agree with that as well.
I just wanted to know because I made that call to request it, and I'm glad I did then.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Ms. Galvin, is there a legal issue around the receipt, just approving the receipt?
I agree with your thinking that there should be documentation that goes with the receipt, and that should be provided.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Thank you, Ms. Folks, for that clarification question. So with that information, I'd like to motion to approve the request for telehealth registry for Dr. Hackett. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. Now I need to get back to my script here because I know there's something specific to say and it's buried. let's see. Are there any other items that anybody would like to have put on future agendas?
So since I'm really new to the ARC, the Application Review Committee, I'm wondering, is this time set in stone on Fridays at 7:30, or is there wiggle room, or what are people's thoughts? Because Amy, you people have been around way longer than I have, and I don't want to stir up trouble right away.
Madam Chair, Dr. Seideman, traditionally at this time and on this day because of people's schedules, but if enough of the board members who will serve on this committee agree to a different time, that would be something you could decide on. That would be something Heidi would poll. She would put out a poll and ask, right now, one of the things is that the Committee on Behavior Analysts meets at 9:30 on this same Zoom channel.
Basically. Got it.
And so that's one of the issues. So it would have to be probably on a different day if you don't like this time, if this time is problematic.
Okay. I think I'm going to pull my question then. but thank you. That's helpful, Ms. Vaux. Just a curiosity and, you know, it's always good to ask.
And you're not alone in asking that question. We have another board member who is very much a night owl.
Oh,
she's not a fan of the 7:30 time, but after the previously when she requested it, the poll ended up, we found that we could not find an agreement on a time or right. a day that was different that the members could attend.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Dr. Seideman, I suggest everything Kathy said is true, but speak to Heidi about it.
Okay.
I doubt it could be later on this particular Friday because of CBA staff will be conflicted.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean there's not, you know, some other possible option, but I would run it by Heidi when she returns.
All right. I agree.
Thank you.
The other issue that we run into is that the committees are scheduled, the meetings are scheduled in pair with the board meeting.
Yes.
And so we have to be within a certain time frame to meet one of the staff, actually it's a rule requirement that all materials, all application materials are in and an application is complete 18 days before the board meeting in order to be placed on an agenda for one of the committees.
Yep.
And so we have to work within that time frame. So that 18-day deadline is usually the Monday, almost 2 weeks before the committee meeting.
Right.
And then I have to, you know, spend that week getting all the materials together and get that presented to you, to the committee members, so that they have at least a weekend plus the following week to review all the applications. So it's a juggling act.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. And I don't want to cause any trouble. So I will speak to Heidi. And we'll see what happens.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Seideman. So before I move on to adjournment, I just wanted to take a quick second and say thank you to everyone who reviewed and for all staff who had any hand in putting this extraordinary agenda together, and the time that it takes to review it is so very appreciated. So thank you, Dr. Seidman, for jumping right into the fire on your inaugural meeting.
I appreciate you taking the chair position. You did it quite well. Thank you so much, Dr. Flynn.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Maybe they'll let me do it again sometime.
I vote.
Yeah. You've been drafted.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you, Ms. Galvin. I appreciate that.
Can I make a quick comment, if you don't mind, Dr. Flynn?
Yes, please, Dr. Seidman.
Is there a way to, and Ms. Fowkes, I wonder, is there a way to memorialize this extraordinary agenda that we had and, put it in the record books or something?
This is one I probably will never forget. But one of the reasons why it was successful is you'll probably have noticed the new way the application itself is presented. That is a new feature in our Centia database that allows the application summary. At some point when we're ready, the Committee on Behavior Analysts is actually going to be reviewing the applications using the actual summary in the database and going through it.
Oh.
And they're going to be ready before we are. And it'll take a little training, but you'll be able to go through that summary and click on each item to see any more information you want to see, and to click on the file itself, the document, as you go through it, rather than dealing with PDF pages.
That's fantastic.
So we're not ready yet, but what you're seeing there is that new application summary. And then, we are printing to PDF the bigger, the pages that need more information, like the education, the doctoral degree, the internship or postdoc or pre-internship, supervised experiences. We're, putting those right before the documentation, the verifications. So
that's wonderful. Thank you Excellent. For that.
Thank you, Ms. Folks. PM, Dr. Wilson, I believe I saw your hand up. Did you?
Yes, it's Dr. McGuire. Patricia, hi, Kathy.
Thank you, Dr. McGuire.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm my application based on, I know you guys had discussion about it. It's been approved to move forward to the board meeting, correct? Like I've met all the requirements.
Our motion was to approve your application to move forward. Yes, ma'am. So it'll appear on an upcoming board meeting.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members,
yes.
Dr. McGuire and anybody else still on the line, I do send out an email later today. It won't be till this afternoon, but an email that lets you know what the committee stated or recommended for your application and what comes next. So.
Thank you for that so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Ms. Folks, for doing that. So do I hear a motion to adjourn the application review? Oh, one more question. Yes, Ms. Dr. Brissette?
Brissette, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good morning for everybody. I was hoping my application would be included, but clearly it's understandable Dr. Seidman had to excuse himself because he was my professor. So I'm just wondering, my application review would be postponed until the next week meeting. Would be possible...
No, ma'am.
Would be possible I can also attend to that meeting and receive the Zoom invitation for that meeting?
Yes, Dr. Brissette, you will. I will be sending you an email with the link and all the other pertinent information.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions in the audience before we entertain a motion to adjourn the application review committee? I so motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
So the application review meeting is adjourned as of 8:56 a.m. today. Thank you all for all your help and for making it a very successful meeting. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.